joint meeting of the Senate Committee on Regional Affairs and the House
Committee on Regional Affairs. And just for the record, myself, Gary Stevens, and Senator Bert Stedman. And then on the House side, we have Representative Olson, and we'll announce that as they arrive late.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Just on time.
I did not read the directions well enough. Well, we tried.
Okay, we're here for an overview of the Alaska Municipal League, and we have with us Kevin Ritchie and Pete Sprague on audio conference. Mr. Sprague, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Glad you could be with us. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the House and Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committees. For the record, my name is Pete Sprague. I am a member of the Kinnett Peninsula Borough Assembly, but I'm here today as the President of the Alaska Municipal League, and I'm calling from my office here in Savannah. And on behalf of the ANL, I'd like to thank you for giving us this time to share and discuss information about and issues important to local government here in Alaska. We share the same constituency, as you know, and I believe that strong and healthy government provides a firm foundation for a strong and healthy Alaska. I just want to say thanks again for providing us with this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, and see you. Kevin Ritchie's here, and give it back to you. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sprague. Will you be with us in the second meeting? Yes, sir. Okay. Is there anything you want to say? Pipe up, and we'll defer to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Pete. We'll go on then to Kevin Ritchie, the director of Alaska Municipal League. Glad you be with us, Kevin.
Hey, thank you very much, and we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all in this kind of a very informal forum. And rather than bore you to death with hours of charts and graphs and things, I'd like to go through our material pretty quickly so you maybe we'll go back and look at it at some point, when you're considering action or bills or whatever. But where I wanted to start out, and this could be a result of cold medicine, but I was trying to come up with a good analogy for government in Alaska, and pizza in front of you. And it's actually not a bad analogy. When I think, at least it seemed to me like not a bad analogy. But it's when you look at why we have cities and boroughs, you know, obviously cities and the state is basically composed of cities and boroughs. The largest borough technically directly under the supervision of the legislature, but acts as the assembly for the unorganized borough, determines what services it needs and so on. The pepperoni looked a little bit like cities sort of spread out around the state. And one of the major points, I think, is when you get a pizza, you don't think about the crust. I mean, the crust being probably more like the state. Pepperonis being the city's cheese, you know, kind of representing the borough, but you kind of get your services as a whole. And that's how people look at us. I learned as a city manager, if a citizen called up and complained about the road, an answer they never accepted was, oh, that's a state road. You had to somehow make the problem better. So truly, what we have is a wonderful partnership between the state and all of its communities, cities and boroughs, in providing services to the people of the state of Alaska in what we hope is a relatively seamless way. So anyway, that's the beginning analogy. And what I'd like to do real quickly, just to introduce you to the materials here, stapled in the front cover is a copy of the Alaska Municipal League's legislative priorities, a little one-page handout on what the municipal league does, and then a handout which we use as sort of an educational piece called Cities and Boroughs in Alaska, and it talks about the Constitution and a few things that I will talk about as well. But to start out, the Alaska Municipal League is one of 50 state municipal leagues across the country, and our job is to create a forum for municipalities to talk about statewide issues and discuss their own issues, to provide joint training and joint services. Okay, the key points that I wanted to address, and one reason why I'm personally happy that there's going to be a concerted effort for civic education in our schools, is that probably not enough Alaskans really know that we've got, if not the best, the top one or two constitutions in the United States. It allows us to do things in Alaska that other states just dream of. For example, talking to people in other states, they don't have the ability to choose some of their own services, to choose some of their own levels of taxation and so on. And many are fully dependent on the state for all their revenues and what they can do and what they can't do. Another major change between Alaska and other states is that if you live in other states, Arizona, I think, a friend of mine in Arizona was describing to me how he paid five different tax bills. And so you've got, you know, potentially a school district levying taxes, a city, a county, a port district, a utility district, and so on. And it's a, it can be a huge nightmare and uncoordinated. In Alaska, the legislature, the framers of the Constitution had the vision of creating only basically three taxing authorities, a city, a borough, or the state itself. The strong home rule provisions that were provided by the Constitution are really a wonderful opportunity for, you know, probably the best democratic experiment in the United States in terms of local governance. So having said that, and talking about the state, the municipalities as partners, you know, we obviously share the same constituents. In general, Alaskans don't care whether the taxes they pay are state taxes or local taxes. They just know what they pay, and they probably call up whoever's close and talk about it when they feel like it. And again, in terms of public services, we truly have a blend of public services in Alaska, and it may not be the most efficient, but to have a street system work in Alaska, you've got to have the state roads department and the municipal roads department working together. To get from one place to another, you're probably going to fly through a state airport. You may well fly through a municipal airport as well. Education is, I think in general, the funding between boroughs and the state is about 40-60% for the funding, of course, but then schools are implemented by the local school boards. And so on. When you really look at almost every one of our systems, you take public safety and the police departments and municipalities, the laws are basically all blended together. You know, the state takes responsibility for enforcing state laws. Much of the jail system, but it shares that responsibility with municipalities around the state as well. And of course, there's local police departments and village public safety officers and so on. So everything we do pretty much is a partnership. And so it's the artificial things that we do, you know, city budget, city revenue, state revenue, we think about a lot, but probably the public really doesn't think about much. In talking about what we could do together to make the state and the local government roles work better, in 1992, as an example, the legislature and the governor created the Task Force on Governmental Roles. And actually, Arlo Sturgeliski was involved in that, and I believe she's online as well listening in and may make a comment later. But what they concluded, interestingly enough, for the the concept of government in Alaska, since for reasons of efficiency and accountability, and this is out of the report, delivery of most public services should be maintained at the local level unless there is an important reason to do otherwise, regardless of which level of government provides funding. And again, as I mentioned, just one example is if there were a negotiation between municipalities and the state in terms of like road maintenance. Really, the only issue is how do you pay for it? Would it be more efficient to have one agency providing road maintenance at the local level instead of two or three? And the answer is almost certainly yes. And so there's different kinds of partnerships that we could look for in the future that may make a lot of sense. On the question of boroughs, and Senator Stevens was just discussing that before the presentation started, there was, just quoting out of a 1988 regional government study, and this has been really basically the trend since statehood was first initiated, is the report concluded that boroughs would benefit both residents of those regions and the state of Alaska as a whole. And so it goes on to say that incentives to remain unincorporated are so great that few regions are likely to form boroughs under present law, and we've pretty much seen that come through. That really hasn't happened. But in terms of efficiency, I think as we get on to this discussion, what local governments do at a very reduced rate with part-time employees and not necessarily paying a lot of employees that may also have, in some cases, a subsistence lifestyle that supplements their ability to provide for their families. They do things in a very inexpensive manner and, of course, just what the community wants.
Yes, sir. Would you mind questions along the way?
Oh, no, absolutely. In fact, I'm more than welcome to that.
Everyone wants to chime in, let me know. Could you talk to us about those incentives that we have created to keep communities unincorporated, and the opposite of that, the disincentives that we might create to encourage communities to incorporate?
Right. Mr. Chairman, the biggest disincentive or the greatest incentive, I suppose the biggest disincentive for formation would be the loss of the municipal revenue sharing program. Greatest incentive would be some sort of long-term permanent structure for allowing municipalities to provide a higher quality of life for the people that live within their borders. And that, I think, is probably the greatest incentive. One example of that is there hasn't been a lot of interest in creating boroughs in Alaska. However, since I went back and checked a couple days ago, and it's really interesting that the revenue sharing program was created in 1969. And from 1969 till the early 80s, there was actually 84 cities that volunteered, many of which were in the unorganized borough. And so they saw a way of making a better life for the people that that live around, live in the community. I think that's a key incentive. Some of the disincentives, of course, which need to be discussed, they're pretty well laid out, I think, in the Local Boundary Commission's work, and so I'll kind of go over that again. But I think that in unorganized areas today, there's at least no incentives to incorporate, and the serious disincentives are, I suppose the biggest one is paying for schools. If you don't have to pay for schools, and then you form a government, you do, but you still have a school board, you still have schools, I think they're not seeing that as an improvement in their lifestyle. That's a concern.
That's a good point. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to kind of go over some of the other points here, and I just wanted to turn the pages quickly and just sort of indicate what's on them so you can go back for future reference. But some of the things that are the key things that are impacting municipalities right now, across the state, the high price of oil and transportation are created by the high price of fuel. And one of the interesting statistics that we've talked about a lot is that when the price of a barrel of oil goes up $1, according to OMB, the state, over a period of a year, collects $65 million more than it would have otherwise. On the other side, the downside, is every time the price of a barrel of oil goes up $1, everybody else in the state pays $20 million in higher costs. That's based on using 20 million barrels of oil per year. And, yes, sir.
There's an acronym there. We were talking about the 20 million of ISER.
Oh, I'm sorry. ISER stands for the Institute of Social and Economic Research at the University of Alaska. Sorry. I was trying to keep this from going, bleeding over to another page. And actually that came from talking to Scott Goldsmith, and it came out of a federal government report on fuel usage in Alaska. And what they did was they subtracted out the fuel usage at Ted Stevens Airport, because that's sort of international. People just land, pick up fuel, and go. But the estimate of 20 million barrels of oil a year was based on government, school districts, residents, businesses, and so on.
But we're still net ahead.
you're still not ahead. But the cost, the state gets a $65 million, and then the cost is shared by the state, of course, plus school districts, businesses, cities, and so on. The second largest, very scary thing, and all of you are very aware of this, is the increase in the PERS TERS program. And I'll talk a little bit. And the PERS TERS is the state local public employee and teacher retirement systems. And I'll share a few statistics as we go through, but those two cost increases are having a huge impact at the same time that the state has cut revenue sharing for municipalities. So between those things, they're having very serious service impacts on very small communities, and then in the larger communities, we're seeing in some cases some of the highest local tax rates in the United States, which is becoming very significant, and it looks like there's no end in sight at this point. And I can talk about that at some great length. In fact, I've got a chart in here for you to take a look at that shows the research that was done or summarizes the research on the local and state tax rates.
So you're going to get into that later in your presentation?
Yes.
And then you get into more PERS or TERS detail?
Yes.
Okay.
So going through the paper, if you turn to the first yellow section, it says general information on local government. And I think we can, let's see, so are you through that page two again?
Yes, sir.
Maybe we'll go on.
I had a chance to read through this, and you just need to help me understand this. Under loss of revenue sharing, the last sentence says, uninsured losses in the legislature's unorganized borough are likely far more than the cost of a revenue sharing program.
Likely to cost far more than, I'm sorry. This is done fairly quickly, I misspoke. Right now, according to, this is just the Alaska Municipal Joint Insurance Association, and it's a separate corporation that insures 140 cities and school districts throughout the state. So far, they've had to cancel insurance for 10 cities, and they're looking this week at canceling 7 more, and then 30 are on month-to-month payment contracts because they can't afford to pay their insurance up front as they used to be able to. With those types of cancellations, this is not my area exactly, and I think it's not clearly defined, but if a loss happens in a city and they have no insurance and they have no assets, it appears to me likely that the deep pocket that a court would look for will well be the state. When Commissioner Blatchford spoke to the Alaska Conference of Mayors, he also made a comment in that area that losses in the unorganized borough would very likely fall to all the people of the state, meaning the state as a whole.
Okay, so I think I understand that. So you're saying losses in unorganized borough would eventually fall to the state. We'd be responsible for them.
Yes. And again, I can't. That's not, I'm not the Supreme Court, but I think it's likely that that would be the end result. And that was specifically talking about the cost of the governor's proposed de facto program that's in House Bill 135, the Fast Track Appropriation Bill, and Senate Bill 98, the Fast Track Appropriation Bill.
And then the issue of senior veteran property tax exemptions. I know when I was borough mayor, the borough at one time when the state decided not to fund that, and it was a big hit to the community. So are you saying that is as important as revenue sharing, or are there other options out there for that senior veteran property tax option to be bailing out of it if they choose to?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, the cost this year of the senior citizen property tax exemption program is just about $40 million to municipalities. The history of the program, I've got some charts in here. I'll refer to them real quickly to show you where they are later. But it started in 1973. And at that time, the basic promise was to the cities that don't worry about this cost because we'll always reimburse you for the cost of this program. And in fact, the state did for 12 or 13 years, which is good. And then it started declining. At the same time, the program really started to get expensive. And so since 1997, the state has provided no reimbursement whatsoever. The state law actually says the state shall reimburse the city or borough as appropriate for revenue lost to it by this program. But of course, the legislature can't be required to make an appropriation each year. So it is pretty much a commitment. And the cost of it now is being borne entirely by the municipalities. Obviously, some sharing of that would be really good. The last amount of data sharing was about $29 million before it started to be cut. The cost of this program is $40 million just among the 34 cities and boroughs that levy a property tax. So they would be really, really happy if all of that was reimbursed. If part of it was reimbursed, they'd still be very happy. And it would probably equate what they were getting in revenue sharing, at least towards the end.
So you're saying that revenue sharing could easily be used to supplement this reimbursement that the state is not giving.
Right. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Of course, that wouldn't impact the small communities, so there would need to be kind of a separate program for small communities to allow them to continue.
Gotcha. Go ahead.
Okay. The next section is a paper that I won't go into, rather get into questions, but we did it, the Alaska Municipal published this about 4 years ago, so not every statistic is up to date, but it gives some interesting information about the unorganized borough and issues like that.
The issue of consolidated governments, is that something that Municipal League has taken a position on? I mean, are you encouraging the consolidation of cities and boroughs into single governments?
Mr. Chairman, it's going to work for some communities and not for others. I can just speak from past experience. Having started working for the City and Borough of Juneau fairly soon after consolidation, it was not the happiest event that ever occurred in Juneau when that took place. And some 30 years later, most of the people of Douglas have forgiven everybody for the consolidation effort. But in fact, I think that when you have three city managers, for example, as was the case in Juneau, they spend an awful lot of time talking to each other about services. And so having one city manager...
Three city managers. So,
well, there would have been a manager of the city of Douglas, and a manager of the city of Juneau, and a manager of the borough. I think at least that experience shows that you can save realize significant efficiencies by consolidation. But again, the issues in each community are going to be separate to that community. What Juneau did, just for background, is rather than completely abolish the various levels of government, it created service areas around each level. So Douglas was its own service area. It could determine its own tax rate, determine its own level of services. So they sort of kept a lot of the independence of individual governments while still realizing savings from the efficiencies.
Any questions?
I did want to stop at the next section, which is the couple of the points you made.
You're on page...
It is the second section in, and I'm sorry, I didn't number the pages, but if you turn to the next yellow tab, that would be the revenue sharing. Ah, there you go. If you have any questions on this front section, I'd be happy to... Okay. The revenue sharing program started in 1969, and so the two things that I think I used to hear a lot is that this was a special program that started because we had oil money, which it isn't. I mean, 1969, I think we were working on it, but we certainly didn't have oil money. And the second thing that I hear fairly frequently is that revenue sharing is a special program that we created in Alaska, and no other city or no other state has a similar program. And in fact, really every state has a water sharing program. A number of studies are done each year. The U.S. Census Bureau keeps track of most of revenue sharing programs and so on. And normally, excluding education funding, about 30% of municipal budgets nationwide is some form of revenue sharing or sharing state income taxes or something that's shared with municipalities. In Alaska, it's always been oil money because that's been the major revenue source that the state has. When the program was first started, it was kind of interesting. They made it very service specific, and so you got $5 per capita to provide police. That was raised to $12 later, and so on. So you got money for police, fire protection, road maintenance, air pollution control, land use planning, and so on. And that program actually operated quite successfully. It was changed into a more of a broad program that included included several factors that nobody ever really understood, except maybe Bo Wilson, who's with the state that used to calculate those each year. But a very difficult formula, and it was based on how much revenue you generated locally, what your population was, what your assessed valuation was, and so on. In 1997, the program, the Municipal Assistance Program, has changed to the Safe Communities Program, largely a title change, but it talks specifically about public safety. And then, of course, in 2004, about approximately 35 years after it started, the Municipal Program was eliminated as a budget cut. The next page is just a summary of the financial relationships historically between the state and municipalities. And I guess the best way to phrase this is that each year the legislature has to decide what it's going to spend money on. And so the legislature as a whole can never obligate a future legislature. So each year is a different decision. But what has happened over the past 30 or 40 years is the state has done major revenue shifts and made essentially a deal with municipalities, and then over time that agreement arose. The four that I have listed there just for food for thought, and this is not any kind of legal thing or whatever, but it's sort of more of a historical note, is that the state senior citizen property tax exemption, we talked about that a bit, where that was a firm deal that the state would always reimburse municipalities time, and ended with about a $40 million loss of revenue locally. The second point is the state used to have a gross receipts tax, which it ended in 1980. And when it ended the gross receipts tax, it created the municipal assistance program to reimburse municipalities for the loss of revenue from the gross receipts tax. And it said that it may appropriate, but the concept was that the state would, 30% or greater of the corporate income tax. So it would share the corporate income tax with municipalities. A very low number on that is $60 million a year. But I was just actually talking to Bill Walson from the state outside, and that number is probably considerably higher. But again, that was a negotiated item back in 1980 for replacing lost municipal revenue, and that's eroded, and then, of course, ends up as higher property taxes locally. I'll skip over the revenue sharing for roads. That's fairly simple. The last one is not something that states generally do. Most states have a form of revenue sharing, and they call it good, but the biggest tax exemption for municipalities is not, in fact, the state senior citizen property tax exemption. It's the state exemption of all state facilities from local taxes. And so in any community, there's going to be a pretty large amount of state land, state facilities, and so on. And while they're a wonderful thing to have in your community, had they been a business, a store, or any other kind of operation, they'd be contributing towards the cost of providing police service to the facility and so on. And again, this is not a normal program among states, though states like Connecticut have what they call a PILT, which is a payment in lieu of taxes paid by the state to help pay for public services to state facilities. And then, of course, the federal government has a federal PILT, which it pays to counties. And the state of Alaska has always very strongly supported the concept of the state or the federal government providing a payment of taxes to Alaska, and this would be based on that based on a similar assumption. But according to the state financial report, the state has about $4.4 billion of land and fixed assets. Very roughly, it's a lot of money, $60-70 million, and that would be paid if those were in private hands. So, again, just a concept, but probably the most painful one is the state senior citizen property tax exemption to municipalities. And then going through this quickly, there's a chart that charts the state reimbursement and how the state reimbursement is trailed off, and then the cost of the program on the next page. And then just a quick overview of all of the major taxing communities and the loss of funding to communities from the senior citizen property tax exemption. And these, the chart, the figures for the chart, the lost money from the property tax exemption was from the state assessor's office. And this is actually part of the annual Alaska Taxable publication.
When we,
Mr. Chairman, when
yes, Senator Sedman, go ahead.
I'm wondering if we're going to get a formal request from the Alaska Municipal League to implement some of this, or is this just general information?
There has been a request, and we're
yes, you will. For the whole thing?
No, we don't really expect the whole thing, but it's part of. I mean, the concept is certainly one that we'd like to explore, not because it's a good thing, not because of any past programs, but simply because of the needs and the issues that are coming down the road for municipalities. Okay. This is actually the last substantive section, but, you know, in the next section, and challenges facing municipalities. I'll get this really quickly. Right now, Alaskan municipalities collect almost $1 billion in property and sales taxes. The only part of that taxation which maybe is not paid, well, it isn't paid by businesses and families in general, is the property tax on oil and gas property, but still a very substantial amount of money. The total property and sales tax over the past 5 years has gone up about 29%. So Alaskan businesses and families are paying increased local taxes, and that's fairly significant. And the things that are happening right now, for example, with PERS and TERS, with the price of fuel, price of insurance, and other things, is going to make those increases look less significant if, in fact, we provide everyone the same level of services in the future. Just a little donut that talks about the different general fiscal pressures that are facing municipalities. And then,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Senator Stabler?
I see you've got the donut here, and there's been some forecast associated with the cost of PERS, and I'm wondering if you're using what value you're using for PERS, if you're using, you know, the end value that the actuaries recommend that the contributions go to, or if you're using the current value or the current contribution rate, or what, and what you'd expect this to look like in 5 years.
This was just very general numbers, but basically the cost of the increases to the public employee retirement system for municipalities is about, it's going up at a rate of 5% a year. And I probably vastly understated this, but about $20 million for each 5%, and so each year it goes up 5%, that amount is cumulative, so it's
$20 million plus $40 million plus $60 million, or, wait, 20, 30, 60 as it goes up. So by the time we get to 30% of salary for employees, it will have gone up roughly 4.5 times, I guess. So that'd be in the $80, $90 million range.
So it would be substantially a bigger piece of the donut.
Yes, it gets bigger each year.
Okay.
Thank you. Any more comments on that donut?
Okay.
Sorry for the donut, the pizza.
What's lunch?
One part of the presentation, which I think is really personally the most poignant to me, is that the small cities in Alaska are facing conditions that nobody in Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or many other communities in the state would really stand for. And to a certain extent, the Alaska Municipal League has to represent people that probably don't have, well, actually, I know don't have lobbyists, or it's hard to get their points across, and it's done quite well in some cases, but it's a tough thing to really, you know, be talking to small communities and listening to their frustration. One thing I handed out in addition to the book, and this is just something to look through later, but I wanted to look at maybe the first two letters. These are letters we received in the last week or so, specifically in regard to Senate Bill 98 and and Senate Bill 135, the fast track for small communities. And even though the title of the fast track is energy assistance, it's really much broader than that, the need. And just a couple of things. This is AMBOR. I arranged these in alphabetical order. They dropped their village police officer because they couldn't afford the insurance coverage. Now they're dependent on the state troopers and one VPSO, which is basically their public safety for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Insurance is one of our highest expenses at over $22,000 a year. Last year it was $30,000. We need to raise a 3% sales tax, but we're not going to see those increased revenues for a while. We're paying $5.15 per gallon for stove oil, or for gas, and $4.95 per gallon for stove oil. We're paying as much as $1.75 a pound for freight on fresh groceries, and the cost of keeping our water and sewer plant running and also keeping up with maintenance and heavy equipment is a challenge. The little scribbles I put on top, when you talk about taking responsibility, Ambler is a town in the Northwest Arctic Borough, and so it's in a borough, and the Northwest Arctic Borough pays its way for schools, and it doesn't have a property tax because that's probably not feasible in the Northwest Arctic Borough, but it pays an amount equal to the amount of property tax they would have to pay. But in Ambler, they have a 3% sales tax, and from that 3% sales tax, you know, they get $26 per capita for every 1% of sales tax. And so they have 291 people. And so each 1% increase in sales tax brings in an additional $7,500 per year. And so to get to the point where you're replacing, say, $50,000 in revenue sharing, you literally wouldn't want to see, I'm not doing the math well, but it would be the highest sales tax in the United States just to replace revenue sharing, which isn't really a lot of money. The total assessed value of the city of Ambler is $3.5 million. Meaning that it's about the value of a movie star's vacation home, pretty much, I mean, the whole city. So in terms of that being a very likely prospect for a property tax, the reason that it's so low is that number one, people don't have a lot of money, but much of the land isn't taxable because it's native allotment land or otherwise owned by the federal government.
Senator Stedman? Well, that was the question I had, is the how much of the property is non-taxable.
Right. And the, as I said, the other part of the problem with the property tax is that to levy a property tax in a small community, you'd have, to actually get money out of it, you'd have a very small segment of the population paying very high property taxes, and another segment of the population paying low property taxes. So you've got some significant equity types of issues. A calculation that we did with the state assessor for the city of Bethel was kind of interesting. Bethel has a 5% sales tax, and, well, maybe it's 6 now, but at the time we did the comparison, looking at the amount of taxable property in Bethel, it would take a 50 mil property tax to replace a 5 cent sales tax. And then you have the problem of one homeowner paying 50 mil of property tax, which is about 2.5 to 3 times as high as Anchorage. And then others paying really none. And so it's a lot less feasible. And the second page, just real quickly, same type of thing, and this is Electnagic, and I honestly did this just in alphabetical order. You'll see other things here. I didn't pull out the worst ones. Again, Electnagic, we do not have enough personnel do not have enough time to provide service, or buildings and equipment are in various stages of disrepair, so the airport is not always open, or the roads are not always maintained. This could be a disaster in the emergency when someone needs to be medevaced, or we need to get to a fire or a truck, or take a truck, get a fire truck to somebody's house. And again, in Electnagic, which actually does far better than Amboy in terms of sales tax, they're still, they're taxing at 5% right now, and that each 1% of sales tax brings in $18,000, so they'd have to go to about 8% to replace revenue sharing, the loss. And then, you know, so it's problematic when you get to that high of a rate for sales tax. So anyway, the situation in small communities, I, you know, really urge both sides of the House to look at the small, you know, revenue sharing program for the small communities that probably, for the most part, really don't have viable revenue alternatives.
Okay.
The second paragraph talking about the level of service. Can you give any comments on that? Looking at level of service, not cost, determine what is equitable. That's probably my position that AML wants to take.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the...
Under the Electnagic.
Electnagic?
Yeah. Level of service, not dollar amount, and determining equity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. Yes, Mr. Chairman. I think, obviously, it costs a whole lot more to live out in the bush. And so anything you buy, anything the state does, is going to cost more. If the state has an operation in rural Alaska, it costs more, and of course so do the cities, and gasoline and fuel and stuff. So I guess that will probably be something obviously worth considering.
Thank you.
Going through this quickly, because I'm really right at the end, a couple of charts that are interesting. The last thing I really want to point out in terms of facts and figures and things is if you get to the very end of that presentation and it's handwritten on the top, it says comparison of local taxes nationwide and in Alaska. And it's interesting. This is kind of talking about the larger towns. And one more back in this other. This study is a page out of a study done each year by the District of Columbia, the Office of the Chief Financial Advisor. It was originally referred to this as the best tax study that the state assessor in Alaska knows about, because it really talks about property tax burdens on individuals. And what it shows is the property taxes paid by a family of four earning $75,000, and it takes the largest city in every state
And so in Alaska, it's Anchorage is a comparison city. And if you look at the columns, you know, obviously, as state and local taxes go, Alaskans pay fairly low state plus local taxes. Of course, there aren't state taxes, which is why it's so low. Anchorage, which does not levy a sales tax, levies a very substantial property tax, you know, compared to any place else in the country. And this study estimating what a family earning $75,000 would pay estimates that a family in Anchorage would be paying the 17th highest property taxes in the United States. Okay, so keeping that in mind, just realizing that they don't pay a sales tax, however, a business operating, you know, obviously with property taxes as a fairly substantial business tax, and it is an offset, business doesn't get to offset its costs with so many permanent fund dividends or what have you. So it is a significant business impact. Then the next page is a page out of a brand new Alaska tax bill that shows the per capita tax rates in Alaska. And if you run down the column to the Anchorage line, it shows that inside Anchorage, Anchorage pays the 31st per, I mean, it's 31 down the line in Alaska communities in terms of per capita taxation. And of course, Anchorage has an economy of scale that only some can match. But what it really gets at is if Anchorage is paying the 17th highest property taxes in the nation, and it's 31st per capita in Alaska, that means that we're paying some significant taxes compared to other states locally. And again, those when any tax, whether it's a sales tax or a property tax, is too high, it's got various negative impacts. And so that's the danger we really have to watch out for as a state in the future, is making sure that those tax rates don't go so high that they really begin to be burdensome on individuals or business or commerce. Okay, and with that, I'm going to go over the PERS issue real quickly. And Senator Stedman, I know, has been studying this for a long time, and you might just want to have some questions at the end, but it's a huge concern to municipalities. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like the presenter to cut to the chase, give us a solution for PERS so we can implement it.
Okay. Okay. You, yes, sir. Will you ask the first page in?
No, I was just teasing because it's a tough problem.
Actually, I would really like to compliment all of the people in the legislature and the administration and staff who are working on this, because in this particular case, this is a problem that's going to affect every human being in Alaska. If you can imagine going from, say, 10% of salary to 50 or 55% of salary for a teacher to put into the retirement system, or going from 7% to 30% of salary for a public employee, the impact is going to basically break the bank. You know, we won't be able to get the kind of teachers we need, we won't be able to get the kind of public services we need, so there really needs to be something done. And this last page has six ideas which we'll be talking to the legislature about, but they're very similar to ideas that are already under consideration, and municipalities will do as much as we possibly can to try and assist in this effort. These recommendations are the result of 6 months of meetings with school districts, municipalities, and the university. Not each organization has adopted each one of these, but basically it's don't pass any more bills that affect the system until we've got things straightened out. Very important, I think, for the long run is right now there's no special analysis that has to be done for a bill that affects the PERS system, and the cost of not doing that can be very, very high, because you can never say, I'm sorry, I miscalculated, we shouldn't have done that with a retirement benefit. Three is introduce the tier recommendations put together by the PERS Tourist Board, because there are not everyone may agree on what those changes need to be, but there's a number of changes that make a great deal of sense within those recommendations. So that is something that we'll be supporting.
looking for financial solutions. One, the only really simple financial solution is pump a whole lot of money into it. One alternative solution, which we're very interested in considering, is potentially selling pension bonds, which could be a very could knock about $150 million off the cost of not having that $5 billion in the bank that is needed. The fifth recommendation simply is expanding representation on the pros and cons boards. And actually, municipalities, school districts, and the university have a bigger portion of the pros and cons program than the state does. And so setting up a system that, frankly, talks about accountability is, we could say, nobody told us things were going to get this bad or we would have done something. We can't say that if actually municipalities are directly represented on the board as well as school districts and the university. And the last one is just financial administration. And I think we've spent hours talking about frustrations about things that might have been done differently. And I think it's safe to say that there are some weaknesses to just following actuarial evaluations at all times. And there's other kind of long-term planning things that might need to be considered. So that is getting to the very last page.
So before we go to that, then, Senator Stebbins is our first choice guru, and do you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple, Mr. Chairman. I apologize to you. I didn't mean to, seriously tell you to hurry the presentation to person tours. I didn't want you to do that because it's a very important and costly issue. But just a quick note on item four, I think you'd mentioned at the last sentence, an example was the, $2 billion pay down could lower long term. Well, that sounds different, I think, than issuing the pension bonds. Pension bonds, you'd actually go out and borrow more money and try to make a spread. And we may, in fact, someday look at trying to do some equity infusion into it. I mean, that's certainly on the table and a lot of other things. But, Mr. Chairman, just to help the public put the pros and cons issue that we face behind us, much less what we face coming at us, but just the liability behind us, we've been in this meeting for almost an hour. The state would have to pay $25,000 an hour for 25 years straight to pay that off. That's the magnitude of it. It's huge. And, the longer we put this, longer it takes for us to come up with a solution, actually, the more potential we have for having an increase. But anyway, it is a very, very large problem.
Yes, and I think we all realize that. I know the municipalities do, and they are in this with us as we try to find some solution. Any further comments on first-tiers? Okay, and
not necessarily a comment, but we're having a Cal State Affairs is having a work session tomorrow at 10 a.m. Assuming you'll probably be there or be represented, or
we've been going to a number of them. So yes,
10 a.m. in State Affairs.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The very last page is and maybe President Sprague. I apologize for taking longer than I thought. It's partially the cold, I think, but. The last page is a list of recommendations that the Alaska Municipal League Board got together at their last meeting on January 26th in Juneau. And this is basically the package that they feel is important. It does include either some form of revenue sharing for municipalities or relief from senior citizen property tax exemption cost, which will actually strengthen the program for seniors as well as be a very significant local property tax relief measure. So, and again, I apologize for taking so long, and thank you very much for your indulgence. And I think maybe Pete Sprague, President Pete, would like to kind of summarize a bit.
Thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate that. Pete Sprague, are you there?
Yes, I am. I've been muted and unmuted, so I haven't really. I'm not sure when I'll be able to break in or not. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes. They say I'm commercial. Okay. Yeah, we do see as real key issues, and these were the four that really came to the fore, and we spent a lot of time working on the language, even using and then going through the revenue sharing, of course, is key, and tax relief in whatever form. If we're talking about senior citizens, disabled veterans, property tax exemption, and just to bring that one a little bit closer to home for Senator Stevens as well as for Representative Olson, that I had our tax assessor run those numbers yesterday, and that mandated amount is just about $3 million for the Kenai Peninsula Borough alone. So that's a pretty significant amount of money there. And then the PERS TERS is Senator Stedman is aware as anyone that it's a huge issue, and it's going to be very problematic to decide. And I was really hoping to hear Kevin's solution when Senator asked that question about how we're going to solve that. But I think that's going to take a lot of work for all of us to get there. And the incentives to form sustainable and accountable borrowers, that's more Kevin's bailiwick. But we did have a discussion, and I found it interesting. I was watching Gavel to Gavel just before this committee came on yesterday afternoon. There was a discussion about borough formation in the Bethel area. Actually, it was a discussion about a port authority, a Kuskokwim Port Authority, and the discussion about boroughs arose. And the last municipal position is at this point a voluntary organization, and it is obviously a controversial and emotionally charged issue as well, but we are all aware that it is one that needs to be addressed as well. And with that, once again, if there's no questions, I'd just like to thank everyone for their time. I'm certainly staying on the line.
Thank you, Mr. Spray. I really appreciate you being with us. I see that Arlis Sergilewski is also on the line with Bethel LIO. It says that she's a listen only, but I can't imagine Senator Sergilewski just listening.
Do you have any comments? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Don't get me started. No, I'm here because, I've appeared before you at the time that Local Boundary Commission came in. I just would encourage the legislature to really become familiar with these issues. And I know there are some huge issues such as the PERS, TERS, and the revenue sharing. But look at what's happening to the communities. It's a very sad thing when we see the little communities go in a sense out of business. What are their alternatives? And so I hope there can be some progress made to look at the whole of the issue, whether it needs a special committee, some traveling in the summertime. But I would encourage you to get the Local Boundary Commission, the Municipal League, and other organizations that have knowledge and care about these communities to really come forward with some specific recommendations and to work with you. You've got a big job, but it needs to be, there's been too much neglect of some of these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Thomas Fisher. It's always good to hear from you, and you are in Bethel?
No, I cut out and I thought, he said Bethel. No, I'm in Anchorage, and thank you for letting me call be a part of this.
Thanks so much. We also have Valerie McCandless from Wrangell.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here of Wrangell. I'm serving as Mayor of Wrangell, and I would like to speak in support of Kevin Ritchie's concerns, and we appreciate the Alaska Municipal League taking a leadership role in bringing these issues forward. We're very concerned about the PERS and TERS issues, and we're hopeful that there will this year be a reinstituting of the municipal revenue sharing. We're having a very difficult time maintaining our local budgets. We're an area that has a very high local sales tax, and our property mail rate has gone up in the past few years, and we're having people that it's very difficult for them to remain in our community. And we don't want to see everyone having to move to the larger areas like Anchorage or Fairbanks or to the lower Pyrenees to be able to keep these local in operation. And we certainly thank you for looking at these issues today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Candless. We'll come back to Wrangell in just a minute. I see the mistake I had made. It's actually Dave Trotham in Bethel. Is that, are you there, Mr. Trotham?
I am. Thank you.
And would you identify yourself and tell me if I made a mess out of your name there?
My name is Dave Trotham from Bethel. I serve on the Board of Directors, AML for Region 9, that's the Bethel Region, Kuskokwim, and Yukon Region.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Trantham. Go ahead.
I'm primarily here, I am here today to support the AML position on sustaining communities. Kevin has said pretty much all, along with Mr. Sprague. If there's any questions that I could answer from Western Alaska, I'd be glad to do that at this time. I'm here primarily to listen and show support. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Glad to be with us. And we're all trying to gather information right now as well. Any comments, any questions of any of our speakers? Oh, we have one more then. I'm sorry. Robert Prunella is also in Wrangell. Mr. Prunella?
Hello, Senator. This is Gary Lewis. Well, I'm out of the building right now on a telephone call, but we in Wrangell certainly support everything
you're talking about. Okay, thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your calling in. Anyone else who wishes to speak to us, either online or here in the room?
Mr. Chairman, I should introduce Kathy Wasserman, who's working with the Alaska Mistwig and was former mayor of Pelican, Alaska, so, and former president of the Conference of Mayors.
Welcome, Ms. Wasserman. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Senator Sabin.
I'd like to also, for the record, to note that one of the reasons why the population in Pelican is going down, that I represent the community of Pelican, is that because of the mayor went up to June.
Bert and I have served together on many things over the last year, so we know each other well and are able to give each other quite a bad time.
Well, that's good. Somebody needs to keep him straight.
Yeah.
I appreciate you doing that. All right. Thanks very much. Well, back to the table here. Then, any comments, questions of Mr. Ritchie or anything further, Kevin, you'd like to say at this time? Clearly, we have our work cut out for us, and we need to think about Arlis Tujaluski's comments that this is really an issue that needs further analysis and study, and so we'll certainly consider that. Anything further? If not, I really appreciate, Mr. Ritchie, you taking the time to be here, and thank the committee as well. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Kevin.